I've got one loose end. Yeah, that's right. I got one loose end in Matthew. I left you like last week, maybe it was Thursday, that quote in Matthew, that great quote of our Lord's where he said, I acclaim thee, Father, Lord of heaven and earth, that you hide these things from the wise and intelligent. I believe I would have said, God, why in the world do you hide these things from the wise and intelligent and reveal them to babes? Why aren't people smarter? Why do the smart people not see this? The quote unquote smart people not see this? I would have been a little bit exasperated. I'm learning not to be because of this example of our Lord who says, I acclaim thee, Father. Because if anyone was banging his head against the wailing wall, it was Jesus Christ. Oh, interesting tidbit about the wailing wall, for instance. That's not a remnant of the temple because Jesus said not one stone would be left upon another of the temple. So how can the wailing wall that the Jews worship at today and stuff little prayer requests into, how can that be a remnant of the temple? In fact, this is the rumor. I think this is great. I think this is absolutely true. When Titus sacked Rome in 70, when Titus from Rome sacked Jerusalem in 70 AD, he left a remnant of Pontius Pilate, of the Roman, the citadel there, the Praetorium. He left a remnant of that wall there as shoving his finger in the eye of the Jews. Like, we're going to leave this Roman barracks wall up as a reminder that we destroyed your city. And so, how ironic is that, and how appropriate, really, that the Jews are worshiping at the wall belonging to Pontius Pilate, belonging to the dogs of the nations, the curs, the pigs. Yeah, it is so appropriate because I'm sorry, but the Jews today are not exactly spiritually sharp. They've been a bit dulled by God. If you're reading my Roman series, you know that God himself has locked Israel up in stubbornness so that he can eventually have mercy on them and bring them into their kingdom. But God likes them stubborn for now so that the door is opened for us of the nations. So I want to just read another quick passage here from this verse in Matthew. After Jesus says, I acclaim thee, Father, Lord of heaven and earth, for thou dost. There's King James language here. You hide these things from the wise and intelligent, and you reveal them to minors, Father, seeing that thus it became a delight in front of you. You love doing this, in other words. You love hiding things from the wise people of this age and revealing them to babes. All right, I wanted to get these last three verses in real quick, and then we're going to the great white throne again, and we're going to open that book of life, and we're going to see whose names are written in it, because I tell you, I believe there are names written in it, and this is where I have a profound disagreement with A. Enoch, and I'm going to be getting into that, you can bet it. So in verse 27 now, in Matthew 11, to tie this loose end up, Jesus says, all was given up to me by my Father, and no one is recognizing the Son except the Father. Neither is anyone recognizing the Father except the Son, and he to whom the Son should be intending to unveil him. So the only people seeing the Father besides the Son are people. There are people who see the Father, but only those to whom the Son should be intending to unveil him. So the Son himself, apparently, when he was on earth, opened or closed eyes. He had that power. And even though he's putting out the truth, and that the word itself should convict people, it doesn't. So let me read this again, because this is curious that the Son would be doing this. All was given up to me, Jesus speaking, by my Father, and no one is recognizing the Son, Jesus, except the Father. Neither is anyone, only the Father was truly recognizing the Son, I guess. Neither is anyone recognizing the Father except the Son, and he, or she, to whom the Son should be intending to unveil him. So the Son unveils God to people while he was on earth. So it's up to him to open or close eyes. I would think it would have been up to God, but I'm not going to argue with Jesus here. Then he says, this famous passage, lift my yoke upon you and be learning from me, for meek am I and humble in heart, and you shall be finding rest in your souls. Doesn't say excitement, does it? Does it say you will be finding excitement in your souls? No, it just says you'll be finding rest. And the many people that I've seen who are excited in this life, they're not restful. For my yoke is kindly, my load is light. Well, that's only compared to the glory, I guess, because many of us would say that the load of the Lord is heavy. But we're looking at it wrongly, I dare say. And Jesus is humble in heart, and he's meek. And this is the same Jesus Christ who overturned the tables of the money changers at the temple and drove out the buyers and the sellers with the homemade whip. The same one. It's said to be meek and mild. It just shows you, and I love making this point whenever I can, that love is tough. Love must be tough. You have to be tough on people that you love. Keep them going in the right direction. Now we go to the unveiling, back to the great white throne, and I'm really interested in this book of life. And I insist that there are names written in the book of life, and that not everyone judged at the great white throne goes into the lake of fire, which is the second death. Now, I used to believe differently. I used to believe that there was no one written in the book of life. And I got this from the translation of the Concordant Version, the Concordant Literal New Testament, the CLNT. This is how the CLNT reads. And I'm going to get the context, start with verse 12. But the critical mistranslation, and I believe there's a mistranslation here. And I'm going to read a passage from Mr. Knox's book, The Unveiling of Jesus Christ, where he tries to explain why he used one word instead of another word. But I'm not buying it, because only one manuscript out of the three manuscripts, the three oldest manuscripts upon which the Concordant Version was based, only one of those manuscripts has the translation that Knox used. And I wonder why he used it. You'll see what I'm talking about here in a second. Verse 12 of the Unveiling, chapter 20. And I perceived the dead, the great and the small, standing before the throne. And scrolls were opened, and another scroll was opened, which is the scroll of life. Scroll of life, this is the biggie. And the dead were judged, so far so good, by that which is written in the scrolls in accord with their acts. And we know that the scrolls somehow contain the literal acts. I mean, you can view them as they happened. There's no discrepancy, there's not going to be any question as to what happened or what didn't happen. And the sea gives up the dead in it, and death and the unseen give up the dead in them. This is merely saying that everyone who is dead is here. There's no other place where there could be any dead people who are not raised at this time and do not appear at the great white throne. And this is the thing. And they were condemned, each in accord with their acts. They were condemned. That's verse 13, according to the Concordant Version. And they were condemned, each in accord with their acts. If this word is left to stand, if this word is the right translation, then nobody does get out. Nobody does escape the fate of the second death. Okay, so listen. Even if that were true, even if no one escaped the judgment of the great white throne, it still remains that the second death is death, and there's no consciousness in the second death. These people are still going to be reconciled fully to God. They will be vivified, I should say, because I think everything's made right at the great white throne. I'm going to talk about that probably tomorrow. Let me make a note of that. Okay. Everything is made right. And people, I'll do it now before I forget. People get upset. It's like, Martin, if you tell me everything is made right at the great white throne, these people are judged righteously by a righteous God, and they suddenly see the light, and they're aware that there is a God, of course, because there he is sitting on his throne. Why would any of them go into death again? Because they're perfected. They're made. They see the light. Here's the simple answer. I will apply it to you today. Do we not see the light today? Have we not been given the conciliation, and we accept it, that God is at peace with the world, and God has given us faith to believe it, and now we are not only conciliated to God, we're reconciled to God, and we're justified by God. That is, he treats us as if we did not sin. He looks at us through the death of his son. And yet, some of us, some of my good friends in the faith have died. The Apostle Paul has died. How is that fair? How can somebody like Paul die? It's simply this, that Paul was not meant to experience the ensuing years. From the time of his death until now, he was not destined to live during those times. It's that simple. So the argument that everything's made right with us, why do we die? It doesn't hold water at the great white throne because we accept the fact that even though we're believers today, some of us die. And if you stop thinking of death as a punishment, which I would love for you to do, and I'm going to convince you of it when we get to the second death, which is very soon, I'm going to convince you that death is not a punishment. It's simply that God did not appoint those people who go to the second death. He did not appoint them to live during the final eon. Simple as that. When are they going to live? They are going to rise from the second death eventually at the consummation of the eons. Am I just making that up? How can I possibly say that? Because of 1 Corinthians 15:26. Mark this verse well. Paul speaks of the consummation, and he says, then cometh the end, according to the King James Version. The Concordance says, then comes the consummation, when death is abolished. This is God's goal. The last enemy, Paul says, that's it, yeah. He said, the last enemy is abolished, death. Death is the last enemy. And there's only one death operating at that late time in the Aeonian times, and that is the second death. And so everyone will come forth at that time because there won't be any such thing as death, and they will be conciliated to God. No, they will be given immortality, I should say. They will be given immortality at that time. But it's simply not appointed for them to live. So if you don't see it as a huge ripoff that some of us die, I mean, sure, every one of us would like to be part of that generation that does not see death, and there is a generation, and I believe we are that generation which will not see death. We shall not all die, Paul says. And is that 1 Thessalonians 4 or 1 Corinthians 15? Read them both, you'll find it. We shall not all die. So those at the great white throne are not being ripped off. Those who go even to the second death are not being ripped off. But I think the news is much better than that. I think that this is a mistranslation. No, I think it's a bad translation in the Concordant version. Now, I'm going to read you A. Enoch's words, his own words, about his justification for using the word condemned. And there's just a slight difference between the word judged and condemned. It's the same root word. Judgment is krino, and down judgment is katakrino. I think I'm saying that right. Kata is the prefix for down. So it's a down judgment. A down judgment is a bad judgment. So he translates it condemned. So anytime the katakrino is used, Nock will put condemned in the Concordant version. Every time simply krino is used, he will use the word judgment. And so a judgment is, we don't know the outcome yet. They're just judged. Now, this is what A. Enoch has to say to justify. He says, well, I'll put this in some context here. Another scroll is open which relates to life. Here's Knox's comment on that. Some have been stumbled by this statement. I perceive the dead, great and small, standing before the throne. As a matter of fact, they are alive, yet in truth, they are dead. Ah, you know what? I don't want to read that. I didn't want to read that paragraph, actually. They were not raised in the resurrection of life. They are not vivified. They do not possess deathlessness. That's true. Those who are raised at the great white throne do not possess deathlessness, that is, immortality. So just because there's, I see what he's saying now, just because they're standing doesn't mean they're immortal. It just means they've been raised to life, just like Lazarus was raised to life, and many were raised to life back in the day after our Lord's resurrection. Over 500 came out of their tombs, but they were subject to death again. And anyone who's subject to death again is not immortal. They were not raised in the resurrection of life. They are not vivified. They do not possess deathlessness, as was the case in the former resurrection. Yes, the resurrection before this one of the Israel saints, before the 1,000 years, that was a resurrection to immortality. There are only 3 resurrections to immortality. Well, technically 4. Christ is the first one. Christ alone has immortality, says Paul. And then those who are Christ in his presence, they will be made immortal in his presence when he returns. He returns for us next. We are made immortal. Have no doubt about that. We're not being raised from the dead in order to die again, my friends. No, we are going to be raised to immortality. This is a secret resurrection. Paul says, behold, I tell you a secret. This is in 1 Corinthians 15, now that I think about it. We shall not all die. We shall not all die. We shall not all be put to repose. This was a secret. 1 Corinthians 15, late in the chapter. Therefore, if it's a secret, then it was not known before. What was known before was the former resurrection, that is, the resurrection of the Israel saints. That is known as the former resurrection. It happens at the end of the 1,000 years.
I meant to say at the beginning of the 1,000 years.
Daniel, in Daniel chapter 12, Job mentioned it, Mary mentioned it to Christ when at the death of Lazarus. I know he will be raised in the last day. They knew of a resurrection of the righteous. That is not our resurrection. Our resurrection was said to be secret. Therefore, it can't be any previously mentioned resurrection. Okay, but these are the resurrections having to do with immortality. These are people who come from the grave and never die again. Those at the great white throne are not among this contingent. They are still subject to death. And now this scroll is opened up, right? Now, here's the key. Knock says this, my time is running out. I'm going to touch on this. No one whose name is in the scroll of life will have any part in this judgment. That's us. That's us. For these are not merely judged, but let me start. What? No one whose name is in the scroll of life will have any part in this judgment. For these are not merely judged, but condemned. Okay, it's a strange way of saying that Knock thinks some people, Knock thinks no one, no one is written in the book of life. Now, here's the thing. Quote, it is true that most of the manuscripts read judged. Remember that verse I said? And they were all condemned. They were all condemned, it says in the concordant version. I'm going to find it for you real quick here. Hang on. They were all condemned. How does this read? Concordant version. I've got some juggling act here going on here. And the sea gives up the dead and death, and the unseen give up the dead and them, and they were condemned each in accord with their acts. Only one manuscript had Catacrino, and it was Sinaiticus. Yes, there were the three most ancient manuscripts used in the translation of the Concordant version were Sinaiticus, Vaticanus, and Alexandrinus. And only one had Catacrino, and that was Sinaiticus. And Knock took that reading, even though two of the three said Crino and not Catacrino. He said, it is true that most of the manuscripts, and maybe even more than Vaticanus and Alexandrinus said that. It is true that most of the manuscripts rejudged, but Sinaiticus seems more likely to be right here, as the preceding chi, that is the Greek connective, K-A-I, may easily lead to the omission of the prefix cat, K-A-T, which changes judge to downjudge or condemn. This is not the resurrection of life, and I agree with him, it's not the resurrection of immortality. It's not a vivification. I have no arguments with that. Of course it's not a vivification. Vivification means life beyond the reach of death. It's a fancy word for being made immortal. It touches the spirit rather than simply the soul and the body. It is utterly ignored when the apostle recounts the three classes to be made alive. Okay, if you're confused, I know I went a little quickly. My show's dwindling down. It dwindled down about 2 minutes ago. I'm on overtime right now. I don't know. Do I get overtime pay for this? Do I get overtime pay? No? Okay, that's okay. It doesn't matter to me. I'm a servant of the people. So, look, I'm gonna talk about this. I just think it's strange that two of the three manuscripts said judged, not condemned. This makes all the difference in the world for the people at the great white throne. And I'm going to explain to you why it does tomorrow.